All right, joining us now is Tony Arterburn of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. And, of course, you can get to Tony's website directly, or you can come through mine, davidknight.gold, that Tony has set up to let him know that you came through us. And, Tony, as you're watching gold, boy, it's having its moment now, isn't it? But it's I don't think it's just a moment. I think it's going to be a longer-term trend, isn't it?
Well, it is, and yeah, this is going to be one of the biggest stories of our time, really, the revaluation of all currencies. I was looking at the history of the price of gold, and it's, you know, you go back to the 1940s when they established the gold standard at Bretton Woods in 1944 and pegged the dollar as the world's reserve currency. It's $35 an ounce, and it stays that way until Nixon takes us off the gold standard in August of 1971. It's $35 an ounce. And of course, David, if you look at the 1970s, you have the Nixon shock, the inflation. People didn't really understand what was happening. We had inflation, but that really wasn't part of the American story. That never really been part of our economy before. And if you look at the 19th century, the entire 19th century, there is no inflation whatsoever. So the end of the 1970s, you have interest rates in the teens. Gold goes to $850 an ounce in 1980. And we talk about silver all the time, being $50 an ounce in 1980, which is crazy, as you know, because the purchasing price of the dollar has plummeted since then. So we really don't know the true price of gold. And all the experts and the mainstream media teleprompter readers and the financial networks, they've all been wrong. They've all said that gold was going to go back and be under $1,500 an ounce or less. That hasn't happened, even with the Fed raising rates. And of course, when you raise rates as the Federal Reserve, just like Paul Volcker did in the 1970s, it's supposed to strengthen the dollar. In theory, that's true. But the de-dollarization is happening. That's, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And, you know, we talk about the 70s and, you know, OPEC and 1979, you had the Iran hostage crisis, 444 days. A lot of that setting the stage for.
Isn't it amazing how history rhymes? You know, here we are.
It does. It rhymes.
We're looking at these oil embargoes and everything that Biden did and shutting down our domestic production. And he was our OPEC, you know, but it's the same type of thing, sending a shock through the system. And now we got hostages and we got Iran and we got all this other stuff back on the plate again.
It's true. And, you know, I study history. I'm not an expert. I'm a paratrooper who likes books. But I go back and look at history and I think, you know, these things are alike, but we are in completely different times. You can't really go by the past because, you look at 1979, the Iran hostage crisis. Like I said, it lasted 444 days. There was the oil embargo. You had shortages. But we live in a world now where there is no Soviet Union. You know, there was a cold peace, really. There was a cold war, but there was a cold, it was held together by this East-West conflict. And of course, the Soviet Union disappeared and broke into 16 pieces in 1991. And since then, you know, the United States has gone around as the policeman of the world, hegemonic dominance. The dollar is the world's reserve currency. We have 40 sanctions on 36 different countries. And then something called, the CIA calls it blowback. I don't know why there's a scientific term for you know, your behavior comes back on you. People don't like dealing with bullies. And so now we're looking at a de-dollarization situation where all these countries want to get away from us. They want to get away from the United States dominated economic system worldwide. And David, I'm concerned that a lot of people, you talked about it yesterday. Your show was excellent yesterday, talking about warmongers in the Christian community that really need to step back and examine their behaviors and how they're looking at the world, how they're looking and using the United States military as an extension of their theology, which I think is so short-sighted. We're playing right into the hands of evil when we do that.
That's right.
And I don't think they really understand that this is language. When you have Hamas and Israel, this is about Iran. This is about the neocons. It's about the Trotskyite neocons that control so much of our foreign policy. It's very Israel-centered, very Middle Eastern-centered. You have multinational corporations, the energy industry. It plays a part in this, but this has nothing, almost nothing to do with terrorism. It has everything to do with the global chessboard And I don't understand it because I don't have the inside information, but I can tell, you know, if you don't have a sober look at this, you're really going to get caught flat footed with what's going to happen to the economy. I'm looking at an article right now on MarketWatch. This is from 2 days ago. Oil could soar to record high of $150 if Israel-Hamas war escalates further, says the World Bank.
Which, yeah. Yeah.
Listen, when the,
I've seen several people say that, say it could go up 50% or more. Yeah. Real quickly. And it's amazing. We're talking about Ken Hagee, you know, as he's got this, this church meeting where he has the political, ambassador, from, Israel there on the stage. It's like, so is this church or is this politics? You know, and then he gets up and he goes on this rant about how we got to sink Iran's ships and all this kind of stuff. It's in the Bible. It's like, yeah, show me where that's in the Bible.
show me chapter, like you said yesterday, show me chapter and verse. This is something they turned so many young people off.
Yes.
Who are looking for an off ramp to the chaos in our world today. You go look at the hate that is on Twitter, that's on the social media, the people that are ramped up. There's a bloodlust out there.
Yes.
It's playing to the worst parts of us. And gosh, David, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, the right was anti-war.
Yeah.
We didn't like, we could see through the Ukraine debacle. You know, that was very much the left's war and Hollywood and Zelensky. And that, again, I called it a Goldilocks situation. Now you've got the right. They've got two wars. They've got us right where they want us. And this is going to lead to the reshuffling of the grand chessboard of the globe. And I don't think people understand what this really means. This is language and we're left out of it. It's a big club. We ain't in it. And I would really be looking for a way to protect your wealth. And this is something I'm studying every day. It's like, how do you,
well, just take a look at Johnson, Speaker Johnson. He was against Ukraine before he became a member of the club. Now you know why he's in there, because now he's for giving money to Ukraine. We got to stop Putin, and Putin is part of the axis of evil. And I said, well, maybe if we look at the axis of evil, maybe it is us. Maybe we're the ones that's starting wars everywhere and demanding that we get into wars everywhere. It's crazy. And as you point out, you got a lot of people who are looking for an off ramp to this insanity, looking for something that is based, some connection to God. And you got so many of these preachers that are out there just preaching war and hate and reflecting this bloodlust that we see on both sides and ramping it up. I understand that's the human response to this kind of stuff. If you look at the pictures of what happened in Israel that Hamas did, it gets you really angry. It gets you sick. Makes you want to throw up. And they use that. They've got journalists that they bring in. They show them pictures of that. They showed it to media and to politicians in Israel, what was being live streamed on the internet as it was happening. And they would go out in tears and throwing up. But you look at what is happening in Gaza now in terms of the Israeli bombing of civilians, it gets the same reaction. And so this is polarizing everybody. And it isn't like people look at both of these things and wait to say, wait a minute, how do we get out of this escalating violence, cycle of violence? I look at both of these things and I just say, let's stop this now. But instead, they want to draw us into it as well. They want to draw America into this as well.
Well, it goes back to the end of the 19th century. You had William Randolph Hearst, who told his photographer or his artist to send him down to Cuba. He says, you give me the pictures, I'll provide the war, because he controlled so many of the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
A war happens every day, and I'm a veteran of 3 foreign wars. I mean, you show me a lot of horrendous, heinous, evil things that people do. Yes, it happens all over the world, and it's not just one faction. Governments do it. Terrorist organizations do it. Criminals do it. We must repudiate and stand against all evil, all violence against innocent people. That's where we ought to be right now, but instead we're caught up in these, you know, I'm standing with so-and-so. You don't understand how all of this works. And I think that's where people really need to examine their hearts, especially as Christians in these times. And you got people like, you talked about Robert Jeffers yesterday. Yeah. This guy. I mean, if you don't know history, then all of this can seem like Armageddon and the apocalypse. We always have challenging times. There's really nothing new under the sun, except the history you don't know, to quote Harry Truman. I mean, this is the human story. There's always war and famine and upheaval and and evil going on, but we have to stand against it. Don't get caught. Don't take part in the darkness to fight the darkness. And I think that's what we need to be communicating to
people. That's right. Yeah. Don't become the monster you fight. Yeah. It's amazing to me to see these people like Ken Hagee and Robert Jeffress and many others. And they'll pull out, okay, so here's my chart. And they got these detailed, complicated charts that they've created out of the book of Revelation. And yet they can't look at Jesus when he says, blessed are the peacemakers.
Yes.
You know, yeah, take your chart and make a big sign, go in front of your complicated eschatology chart that says, blessed are the peacemakers. Okay. And throw that other one away. Because it's being used to deceive you, or you're using it to deceive other people. Throw that other chart away and just go with the simple, straightforward stuff that you're going to be held responsible for. It just makes me disgusted to see what these
Prince
people are doing.
Prince of Peace.
Yeah.
He's the Prince of Peace.
Yeah.
Do you follow Jesus, or do you follow some megachurch pastor with a bloodlust?
Yeah, that's right.
There's a ton of them. I mean,
and they want politics. They want a political connection. They know that's going to get big politicians on their podium, and it's going to get them big audiences and all the rest of the stuff. That's what has happened. It's the Joel Osteen effect. Yes. But except Joel Osteen is not, he's just going for money. He's not trying to kill people and start wars. Let's give Joel a big hand, because he's not as bad as Ken Hagee and these other guys that are out there.
Not as bad, but I guarantee you, push comes to shove, they're going to agree. Oh, yeah. They're going to stand, and they're going to, this current foreign policy, which is absolutely, and it's short-sighted.
Well, and very short-sighted, because you know, we don't want to lose track of the fact that what we're talking about as Christians is eternal. And so, you know, whatever happens between people now on earth, or between nations, or if we get caught in a war, or if we get killed by these policies, that's just a small part of the big picture, which Joel Osteen is keeping people from seeing because of his greed and his love of money. Is that he's keeping people from seeing what is actually going to be the basis of their relationship with God, their salvation through Christ. Instead, it's like, you know, you can save money, you can give me your money, and God's going to give it back to you in spades. And you know, that, if that's what they're looking for, they've missed everything. But yeah, it is. We do see the crimes against people. It's easier to see that than the crimes against God. And certainly these people are trying to, after they tried to push us into the jab and did push the jab with a lot of people, now they're trying to push us into another war and kill more people. And that blood is going to be on their hands, and they'll be responsible for that.
Well, God knows your heart. He knows what you truly value.
Yeah.
If you have a bloodlust, and you have a lust for power or lust for wealth or whatever, mm-hmm. that's going to stay with you. Mm-hmm. I try, when I look at all these headlines and whatever I'm going to do in my life, I try to be for peace. I want to help people. I want my life to stand for that, because I've been on the other end.
Yeah.
As a warrior, and took part in the Iraq war, which was an absolute criminal mistake. Pushed on the Iraqi people. If you look at if you don't know the cost of, you know, displacing millions of people and bombing people that are innocent, and you see the looks on children's faces, if you ever been in a situation where you've had to help those people, that you're never going to be the same.
Unless it's worth it. Wasn't it? Wasn't it worth it?
It was worth it.
Yeah. Like Madeleine Albright said, you killed a half million kids. It was worth it. What did you get out of it?
It's always these smart set, like a McNamara.
Yeah.
You're right. you get a McNamara type that's, from the corporate America. And they have it all. It's all on paper. We need 50,000 troops to control Iraq. And then, you know, fast forward 5 years later, you have Congress talking about the surge and putting 500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Donald Rumsfeld's another McNamara type, you know, when he's not pushing aspartame to be put into diet soda, he was pushing for another war in Iraq. So I think we need to step back. This is going to get even worse as we see the grand chessboard being reshuffled, David.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about monetary debasement, because that is right around the corner. QTR Fringe Finance talking about that on Zero Hedge. Price of gold is hanging in there in spite of aggressive tightening campaign by the Federal Reserve, which is what you keep saying. Real interest rates have gone up quite a bit, yet gold has not reacted the way it has in the past. This is a message here, a message that they can manipulate stuff, but only to a certain amount, right, Tony? I mean, this is like the analogy I think of is the Wile E. Coyote runs off the cliff, and he just keeps running on thin air until at some point he realizes that there's nothing underneath him. And that, I think, is the point that we're starting to approach here. But they're going to weaponize this stuff against us. And so I see it as not just the monetary aspects or, you know, what is going to happen to the price of gold. But this is has a whole new dimension to it now. I think that is going to be a real a big part of this. People are going to flee to something that is for real. But it also, it's just the control aspect of that, which is so dangerous. And we need to have something to defend ourselves against that type of thing. You know, as one person said, gold is for storing your wealth, and silver is for exchanging in terms of, you know, using it like a currency once it really hits the fan. And I think it's going to. The question is, how long? We don't know.
We have a Cloward and Piven currency, David.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
That's right.
The very few will benefit in the crash of the dollar, the coming crash of the world's reserve currency of the dollar. And again, it won't go from king dollar to nothing, but it's going to go from king dollar to prince dollar to viceroy or something. It's not going to be as important, and that's going to destroy the purchasing power.
Maybe it'd be dowager queen or something.
It's
a lot of queens up there.
Yeah. It's going to affect not just ARC, all around the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something that Lyndon Johnson said. He famously said, he says, power is where power goes. The power is going away from the dollar. And one of the ways, you know, Gerald Celente says this, when all else fails, they take you to war. Well, that could be what this is all about. You know, if you want to try to save the dollar or try to save the standing United States, start drawing lines. You make make other nations and factions choose sides. Mm-hmm. And of course, it could be just all an event to cull, you know, certain things, to do some creative destruction. We don't know, but I can promise you the dollar is on its way out. It's not tomorrow. It's not next week. You start looking at where the purchasing price, the purchasing power diminish. And again, where are you going to be when that starts happening? People are going to, they have normalcy bias. They're looking at what happened, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. That's important, but you're not really seeing the big picture, which is what you mentioned earlier. The Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell's raised rates faster than any time in history. Faster. I know it's been in the teens before under Volcker in the 70s, but it's faster than any time in history. He's raising rates and having more meetings and raising rates. And again, that's supposed to strengthen the dollar. So why isn't gold at 1,000? Mm-hmm. You know, the first time gold ever hit $1,000, David, was in 2008. And in 2011, it hit 1,900, almost 2,000. I mean, right at 2,000 in 2011. So you look at the progression of the price of gold. It's the story of the loss of purchasing power of the dollar, right? Mm-hmm. It's into the 1970s, it's close to $700, $800 an ounce. Again, 2011, it goes to 2,000. Ben Bernanke came out at the time, and this is just after TARP and the Great Recession, and he said, we bailed out these banks, we won't do it again, because he saw the rush and people going to gold, not trusting the monetary system. So he said, we wouldn't do that again. But I want to remind your audience that the total debt of the United States in 2010 was $10
trillion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? It was $5 trillion in the year 2000, right? And it's $10 trillion. So we're at 30 plus trillion and climbing with 140% of debt to GDP ratio. It's some crazy number.
Yeah.
And so this is, it's off the rails. We're not going back to a nice, you know, an economy that ran like the Reagan era of the 1980s, where it's just kind of smooth sailing, or the 1990s of the dot-com era. All that's gone. You're looking at a lot of uncertainty. There's going to be a lot of change in again, the resources of the globe. That's why I'm looking at the price of energy and what this war in the Middle East is going to do. But you're absolutely right. People are moving to gold. So the big, again, just going back to, why is gold the price? Why is it, why did it break 2000 last week? Because the rest of the world is moving away from the dollar. Central banks are ordering gold at a record clip. People like Shanghai. Give you an example, the people in Shanghai, there's a different price for gold there. Now I can go on, you can go to davidknight.gold and you can hit a couple of links and you can find the price of gold, or you can go to goldprice.org and check it out, and it's in real time. And I'm gonna promise you that you would think that's the global spot price, and it used to be, except for places like Shanghai, where that price and then add $100, and I don't even know what the next premium set is. So like, I can't give you the price of a gold coin, like here on my desk, I've got a 1 ounce gold bar from the Australian Perth Mint. I don't know what that cost in Shanghai. I can tell you what it cost here. But we're starting to see the disparity between the West and the physical market and the paper market. All of this is coming apart. So I would have people do your own research. Look at this. Look at these prices. Look at the disparity. The reason is not only are governments seeking gold, but people around the world are seeking gold.
Yeah.
Even here in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I saw this article from the interview. It was published up on Bitcoin magazine. So it was about Bitcoin. It was Mexican media magnate, Ricardo Salinas, chairman of a big media company in Mexico, billionaire. And he says, buy Bitcoin and sell bonds to reject inflation. But of course, you know, when I look at it as storing a wealth, as, and that's what he says, store your wealth in Bitcoin. That's what he had to say. But when you look at that, I keep looking at it and it's like, well, okay, I just don't understand it as well as he does. And maybe a lot of these people who think they understand it, maybe they don't understand it as much as they would like as well. Because there was a story that I had last week about a guy who's a billionaire. I forget which one it was. And he had about $1 million that was taken out of one of his wallets. And he didn't even know it. Some guy knew it. Some guy knew that somebody stole this out of his wallet because he's looking, it was a big transaction and he's looking at large transactions and he was able to determine, he knew that it was this guy's wallet. So that's how public this stuff is. And, you know, so I look at it and it's like gold is simple. Gold is more private. And, you know, in the future, if you really want to have some kind of a gray market or a black market, I don't see Bitcoin really doing that because it's too visible. And then also you have people who seem like they know what's going on. You get tech billionaires and they're getting ripped off $1 million at a time. That's the kind of stuff that concerns me. But I looked at this and I said, well, you know, this Mexican billionaire, he ought to look at becoming a bullionaire, you know, getting some gold and, you know, keeping that. And I imagine he probably does. In this Bitcoin interview, he was talking about Bitcoin, but I imagine he's probably got a lot stored in gold and silver as well. Because again, it's simpler. You can have a thief that can come in and take this physically, but it's a lot, it's a lot simpler to deal with. It's a lot more obvious to deal with than it is the cryptocurrencies, I think.
There was an article up on Reuters that said, will Bitcoin replace gold with its $14 trillion market cap or whatever it is? No, it's not going to. And I like Bitcoin. For the record, I had some of the first Bitcoin ATMs that were in this country. I like Bitcoin. I think it's great. I think it's part of this story because we're moving away. This is the era of fiat currency. People don't realize every currency on Earth, for the most part, is by decree. It's fiat, the Latin term, you know, fiat, by decree. There is no value in those currencies, unless there's going to be a big reset there. Gold's part of that, but gold, and again, that billionaire would have a hard time placing an order. If billionaires, David, if billionaires and very, very wealthy people, individuals, and the countries are doing it, it's a little a bit easier to move, you know, that, you know, I think China bought like 29 tons of gold in September. Some crazy number. But if millionaires and billionaires started buying physical gold and silver, there would be none. And it's barely available now, which you would think, you know, economics would kick in eventually, you know, just the supply and demand would drive the number up. It hasn't yet. I believe that it will. I don't know when that day is going to come, but I know last year there was a really big story. There was a woman from Texas. I believe she's a billionaire, went to go place an order. She thought, well, I'll just get, you know, some pre-1965, current U.S. currency, the dimes, quarters, and half dollars. And I think she got a bunch of ordered American Eagles, and it was millions and millions. She had to go through six different exchanges, and the wait time was about 4 or 5 months to have the order filled. That was one order.
Wow. Wow.
So if it was across the board, if billionaires started to do that, I mean, Peter Thiel, a couple of years ago, bought $50 million in gold. They recently sold it, Palantir. They recently sold it, but they had $50 million in gold bars, and they were kind of starting a trend. I thought I would see more of it. But still, the market is very alluring. You can, you know, the millennials buy more gold than boomers or Gen X, except they buy it on paper. So there's still that way that people think they're buying gold. They can go get an ETF and they say, well, I own gold. No, you don't. Because if you just sell that ETF, they're not going to pay you in gold. They're going to cash you out in fiat currency. So really the physical is the market, but we haven't transitioned into that yet. People don't realize because this is a very niche thing. You know, like me talking to you every week about supply. Most people don't hear that. They don't understand. Like you go to your local, people come into my shop and they think they're going to get X, Y, and Z. And they're going to get it right now. That's not how this works. And I tell them, even if I drive down to Dallas or I go to an exchange, I'm the dealer. They're going to tell me to wait. Right.
So this, and I remember, you know, I had put that in my my IRA. I had it in paper gold. And a few years ago when you started seeing some movement in the price of gold, it wasn't happening that much and moving in the same way or the same amount in the paper gold. And I thought, what is going on with that? And there's a lot of articles at the time. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. It's coming through the Shanghai Gold Exchange. And there's all these middlemen and there's all this, you know, perhaps manipulation of the market. And, you know, so that both gold and GLD and SLV, you know, gold and silver, you can get ETFs and what you're talking about with paper, gold and paper silver. So, yeah, I mean, it's, of course, you can do a metals IRA as well, and you can help people with that. But that was a thing that I looked at. It's like, ooh, that's something is going on here that I don't like. I don't like derivatives. Derivatives became a really dirty word in 2008 to me. So it's like, I'm not interested in real estate derivatives, and I'm not interested in derivatives on top of gold or silver. But now you got Goldman Sachs is doing derivatives on blockchain stuff. I mean, it's just, and derivatives on Bitcoin. To me, when I start seeing stuff like that as an indirect level, it looks to me like, you know, there's a scam right around the corner.
Well, what it comes down to is counterparty risk. Mm-hmm. If you hold something that entity can create more of at will, you do not really truly hold an asset. Mm-hmm. That I think that's fundamental. You hold it like I've got that. Here's a 1 ounce gold American Eagle. This is one of David Knight.gold customer is I'm going to be shipping this out to them soon. I was going through some inventory this morning. There's no counterparty risk in this. You buy it, you hold it. That's your gold coin. Mm-hmm. You buy a stock. You're at risk for them to create more of them, especially if you hold dollars, they're creating them right now. I mean, it's going to be worth less tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So it's something that people need to understand. I mean, gold is money. Silver is money. Everything else is debt.
Yeah.
It's not just credit anymore. Everything else is debt.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about what's going on right now at Wise Wolf Gold.
Well, always just keeping the supply chain open. We're busy. We've got customers. We got two locations, Branson, Missouri and Denison, Texas. And those are both our physical locations, but you can purchase from us nationwide. You go to davidknight.gold. We've also got the Wolfpack program, as low as $50 a month for individuals. We can even get you into the Wolf Cub. The level pup. This is funny. On my website, you go to get the on wolfpack.gold. We got Wolf Cub $35, and that's for kids. And you can do one-time purchases too. The holidays are coming up. We try to put some, you know, interesting coins in there, smaller fractional stuff. A lot of kids come into the shop and they're just interested in coins, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be very popular, right?
And very popular. Yes, very much so. very much so. Yeah. So we've got a lot going on. I got a great team. You know, it's God's providence, and I'm just so thankful. I'm humbled. It started out with me and my chocolate Labrador in San Antonio, and somehow I've got six people with work. I got a whole family that works up here at the Branson shop, and I've got Kinsey, you know, closing deals and trades for me. She's really my head trader, and then I've got Denison. So we're really thankful. We've got a good team. Our mission is to keep the supply chain open, to fill orders, and to answer any questions you might have. And I would tell people, I've been where you are. If you don't have a lot of money, I understand. And that's why I started Wise Wolf, because I was interested in just getting, you know, coins a little bit at a time. And I'd go into shops, David, and people would want to know how much I knew before they would tell me anything about the items that I wanted. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you everything I know about it. So we're really humbled. We're glad that we get to sponsor and proud to sponsor your program. So go to davidknight.gold.
Thank you very much. And we really do appreciate your support. And I'm happy to have you as somebody that we work with, because I think that it is something that is important for people to have as part of, value and preparation for what is to come. And so I strongly believe in it and have no problem recommending it, and especially not any problem recommending you, Tony. So I really do appreciate it. Folks, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Good talking to you. We'll be right back.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.